You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. The reason I jumped on the Chris Hedges bandwagon again this morning was not just because Katie Halper interviewed him, but because of this tweet I saw this morning from Dave. When identity is brought up on the left, a lot of people dismiss it and boil it down to class. That's ignoring identity and is class reductionism. It's garbage. And Dave has it exactly backwards. So we had a little back and forth this morning. I said, then Dr. King and Malcolm X were wrong. And Dave says, lol, imagine thinking Dr. King and Malcolm X didn't think identity mattered because they also saw class as a defining characteristic. So he thinks that their be-all and end-all was not the content of people's character, but was race itself. And I came back with, but that's not what they actually said. They understood that class was the defining factor. That's why they were murdered. Thou dost protest too loudly. Comfy Dems and Republicans are the smiling foxes when they focus on race and don't give a fuck about the working poor. So Dave stops LOLing and says, they didn't think identity was defining in their experience as well? And I said, of course they did. They just knew that the solution would lie in unifying the poor. That's why they were on the brink of beginning poor people's marches. And then Dave's weak comeback is, did they interject when race was mentioned and disagree? Because that's what the left does, a lot. And I said, you didn't merely mention race. You said that focusing on class was a distraction from race rather than as the only possible solution. Winning the class war is key, and many are attempting to distract us from that fact. I wish Dr. King would come back from the dead and slap Dave around a little bit.
But I am not voting for Biden. I haven't voted for Democrats since 2000. A lot of it's personal. I spent months of my life in Gaza. I am not voting for anybody who arms and funds the apartheid state of Israel. I have taught in the prisons for 10 years. I have very close relationships with my students and their families whose lives were devastated because of Joe Biden and Bill Clinton and the Democratic Party. And my loyalty is to them. I suppose it's not practical, but I don't really care. I mean, when I heard Obama give that speech to AIPAC in 2016, it might as well have been written by AIPAC. I just can't betray these people. I spent 20 years overseas. This is personal.
And for a lot of us, after what happened to Bernie in the primaries, this is personal for us too. Barack Obama, the Clintons, the CIA, Hollywood took down Bernie Sanders. Joe Biden is their puppet. Joe Biden was the chosen instrument to take down Bernie. So yes, it's personal.
Well, let me just throw in there that the whole mess that we're in was a bipartisan effort, and Biden was complicit. What created Trump? I know half my family comes out of the working class in Maine, so I have very personal experiences to the rage of the white dispossessed voter. The town, small towns in Maine where my family comes from, courtesy of NAFTA, are destroyed. I mean, destroyed is not too light a word. The church that was in front of my grandparents' house in Mechanic Falls, Maine, burned down and nobody ever raised it. It's just a blackened hulk. The bank is boarded up. That one methamphetamine lab after another. This is what vomited up this figure like Trump, in the same way that the economic collapse of Yugoslavia vomited up figures like Slobodan Milosevic and Franjo Tuđman and Radovan Karadžić and others. And if we don't attack these systemic issues, which Biden has zero intention of doing, he's already made that very clear, things are going to continue to devolve and get worse and worse and worse.
Here's a Truth Dig article by Chris called The One Choice Election. There is only one choice in this election: the consolidation of oligarchic power under Donald Trump or the consolidation of oligarchic power under Joe Biden. The oligarchs, with Trump or Biden, will win again. We will lose. The oligarchs made it abundantly clear, should Bernie Sanders miraculously become the Democratic Party nominee, they would join forces with the Republicans to crush him. Trump would, if Sanders was the nominee, instantly be shorn by the Democratic Party elites of his demons and his propensity for tyranny. Sanders would be red-baited, as he was viciously Friday in the New York Times in the piece, as Bernie Sanders pushed for closer ties, Soviet Union spotted opportunity. We've talked about that before, and turned into a figure of derision and ridicule. The oligarchs preach the sermon of the least worst to us when they attempt to ram a Hillary Clinton or a Biden down our throats, but ignore it for themselves. They prefer Biden over Trump, but they can live with either. Only one thing matters to the oligarchs. It is not democracy. It is not truth. It is not the consent of the governed. It is not income inequality. It is not the surveillance state. It is not endless war. It is not jobs. It is not the climate. It is the primacy of corporate power, which has extinguished our democracy and left most of the working class in misery, and the continued increase in consolidation of their wealth. It is impossible, working within the system, to shatter the hegemony of oligarchic power or institute meaningful reform. Change, real change, will only come by sustained acts of civil disobedience and mass mobilization, as with the Yellow Vests movement in France and the British-based Extinction Rebellion. The longer we are fooled by the electoral burlesque, the more disempowered we will become. I was on the streets with protesters in Philadelphia outside the appropriately named Wells Fargo Center during the 2016 Democratic Convention when hundreds of Sanders delegates walked out of the hall. "Show me what democracy looks like," they chanted, holding Bernie signs above their heads as they poured out of the exits. This is what democracy looks like. Sanders' greatest tactical mistake was not joining them. He bowed before the mighty altar of the corporate state. He had desperately tried to stave off a revolt by his supporters and delegates on the eve of the convention by sending out repeated messages in his name, most of them authored by members of the Clinton campaign, to be respectful, not disrupt the nominating process, and support Clinton. Sanders was a dutiful sheepdog, attempting to herd his disgruntled supporters into the embrace of the Clinton campaign. At his moment of apostasy, when he introduced a motion to nominate Clinton, his delegates had left hundreds of convention seats empty. After the 2016 convention, Sanders held rallies, the crowds pitifully small compared to what he had drawn when he ran as an insurgent on Clinton's behalf. He returned to the Senate to loyally line up behind Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, whose power comes from his ability to funnel tens of millions of dollars in corporate and Wall Street money to anointed Democratic candidates. Sanders refused to support the lawsuit brought against the Democratic National Committee for rigging the primaries against him. He endorsed Democratic candidates who espoused the neoliberal economic and political positions he claims to oppose. Sanders, who calls himself an independent, caucused as a Democrat. The Democratic Party determined his assignments in the Senate. Schumer offered to make Sanders the head of the Senate Budget Committee if the Democrats won control of the Senate. Sanders became a party apparatchik. Sanders apparently believed that if he was obsequious enough to the Democratic Party elite, they would give him a chance in 2020, a chance they denied him in 2016. Politics, I suspect he would argue, is about compromise and the practical. This is true, but playing politics in a system that is not democratic is about being complicit in the charade. Sanders misread the Democratic Party leadership, swamp creatures of the corporate state. He misread the Democratic Party, which is a corporate mirage. Its base can, at best, select pre-approved candidates and act as props at rallies and in choreographed party conventions. The Democratic Party voters have zero influence on party politics or party policies. Sanders' naivete and perhaps his lack of political courage drove away his most committed young supporters. These followers have not forgiven him for his betrayal. They chose not to turn out to vote in the numbers he needs in the primaries. They are right. He is wrong. We need to overthrow the system, not placate it. Sanders is wounded. The oligarchs will go in for the kill. They will subject him to the same character assassination, aided by the courtiers in the corporate press that was directed at Henry Wallace in 1948 and George McGovern in 1972, the only two progressive presidential candidates who managed to seriously threaten the ruling elites since Franklin Delano Roosevelt. The feckless liberal class, easily frightened, is already abandoning Sanders, castigating his supporters with their nauseating self-righteousness, and championing Biden as a political savior. This was written back in March, and everything Chris said back then has come true. Trump and Biden are repugnant figures, doddering into old age with cognitive lapses and no moral cores. Is Trump more dangerous than Biden? Yes. Is Trump more inept and more dishonest? Yes. Is Trump more of a threat to the open society? Yes. Is Biden the solution? No. But as Chris has already said, Biden is one of the architects of the system that led to Donald Trump. So Biden is not only not the solution, Biden is the cause. Biden caused Trump. Biden represents the old neoliberal order. He personifies the betrayal by the Democratic Party of working men and women that sparked the deep hatred of the ruling elites across the political spectrum. He is a gift to a demagogue and con artist like Trump, who at least understands that these elites are detested. Biden cannot plausibly offer change. He can only offer more of the same. And most Americans do not want more of the same. The country's largest voting age bloc, the 100 million plus citizens who out of apathy or disgust do not vote, will once again stay home. This demoralization of the electorate is by design. It will, I expect, give Trump another term in office. This is me speaking, but even if it doesn't give Trump another term in office, it still does its job. Its job is to disenfranchise and disempower the people. Either way, it shows the people that they don't live in a democracy. Back to the story. By voting for Biden, you endorse the humiliation of courageous women such as Anita Hill, who confronted their abusers. You vote for the architects of the endless wars in the Middle East. You vote for the apartheid state in Israel. You vote for the wholesale surveillance of the public by government intelligence agencies and the abolition of due process and habeas corpus. You vote for austerity programs, including the destruction of welfare and cuts to Social Security. You vote for NAFTA, free trade deals, deindustrialization, a decline in wages, the loss of hundreds of thousands of manufacturing jobs, and the offshoring of jobs to underpaid workers who toil in sweatshops in China or Vietnam. You vote for the assault on public education and the transfer of federal funds to for-profit and Christian charter schools. You vote for the doubling of our prison population, the tripling and quadrupling of sentences, and huge expansion of crimes meriting the death penalty. You vote for militarized police who gun down poor people of color with impunity. You vote against the Green New Deal and immigration reform. You vote for limiting a woman's right to abortion and reproductive rights. You vote for a segregated public school system in which the wealthy receive educational opportunities and poor people of color are denied a chance. You vote for punitive levels of student debt and the inability to free yourself of debt obligations through bankruptcy. You vote for deregulating the banking industry and the abolition of Glass-Steagall. You vote for the for-profit insurance and pharmaceutical corporations and against universal health care. You vote for bloated defense budgets. You vote for the use of unlimited oligarchic and corporate money to buy our elections. You vote for a politician who, during his time in the Senate, abjectly served the interests of NBNA, the largest independent credit card company headquartered in Delaware, which also employed Biden's son Hunter. There are no substantial political differences between the Democrats and Republicans. We have only the illusion of participatory democracy. The Democrats and their liberal apologists adopt tolerant positions on issues regarding race, religion, immigration, women's rights, and sexual identity, and pretend this is politics. The right wing uses those on the margins of society as scapegoats. The culture wars mask the reality. Both parties are full partners in the reconfiguration of American society into a form of neo-feudalism. It only depends on how you want it dressed up. by fostering an illusion among the powerless classes that it can make their interests a priority, the Democratic Party pacifies and thereby defines the style of an opposition party in an inverted totalitarian system, political philosopher Sheldon Wolin writes. The Democrats will once again offer up a least worst alternative while, in fact, doing little or nothing to thwart the march toward corporate totalitarianism. What the public wants and deserves will again be ignored for what the corporate lobbyists demand. If we do not respond soon to the social and economic catastrophe that has been visited on most of the population, we will be unable to thwart the rise of corporate tyranny and a Christian fascism. We need to reintegrate those who have been pushed aside back into the society, to heal the ruptured social bonds, to give workers dignity, empowerment, and protection. We need a universal healthcare system, especially as we barrel toward a global pandemic. We need programs that provide employment with sustainable wages, job protection, and pensions. We need quality public education for all Americans. We need to rebuild our infrastructure and end the squandering of our resources on war. We need to halt corporate pillage and regulate Wall Street and corporations. We need to respond with radical and immediate measures to curb carbon emissions and save ourselves from ecocide and extinction. We don't need a Punch and Judy show between Trump and Biden, but that, along with corporate tyranny, is what we seem fated to get unless we take to the streets and tear the house down.